7, Stan Phillips.
Mansions of glory and suicide machines sprung from cages on highway nine, torn with human ticket and stepping out over the line. Good morning, Met fans, and happy Thursday to you. Isn't it a happy Thursday? Met baseball doesn't get any better than it did last night. What a game. Playing against a team with the best record in baseball, the LA Dodgers. And what was, it would even say it was probably as good as or better than playoff atmosphere at Citi Field yesterday. We had all the elements, all the stars lined up perfectly. Jacob DeGrom on the mound, who pitched brilliantly. Edwin Diaz coming into the game to a live version of Narco. And Brandon Nimmo with a catch for the ages. What a day. I can tell you right now, that was a game that has become an instant Met classic and we'll be watching it for years and years to come on SNY. Now, in what felt like a playoff atmosphere at Citi Field, the Mets defeated the Los Angeles Dodgers 2-1 as Jacob DeGrom outdueled Tyler Anderson with help from a home run robbing catch by Brandon Nimmo in the seventh inning. And as I mentioned before, Edwin Diaz entered to a live version of Narco from Timmy Trumpet as the crowd went wild, then finished off the win for their save in the ninth. As such, the Mets even the series at 1-1 against the Dodgers with the rubber game this afternoon at Citi Field. Yes, Citi Field. The place to be these days. We got the tennis going on in Forest Hills, Flushing by the Bay, I should say, and Met baseball. You could even say we're at the center of the sports universe these days out in Flushing. Yes, Flushing is God's country when it comes to sports these days. Now, what are some of the top takeaways from the win yesterday? Well, the DeGrominator was spectacular, shutting down the best offense in the majors. Over seven innings, DeGrom allowed three hits, one walk, while racking up nine strikeouts. He gave up a solo home run to Mookie Betts. As such, DeGrom lowered his ERA for the season to 1.98 in six starts, and he extended his streak of home starts to 24, in which he has allowed two runs or fewer. He hasn't allowed more since September of 2019. Now, DeGrom started the night with a lifetime ERA against the Dodgers at 2.87 in 10 starts. This was the first time he earned a win against them in the regular season. He did get two wins against them in the 2015 NLDS, and he pitched some gutty performances back then, if you remember, getting out of jams. He was spectacular in 2015. But back to 2012 and last night. Brandon Nimmo delivered the catch of the year, leaping above the center field fence to rob Justin Turner of a game-tying home run in the seventh inning. Nimmo's improvement as a center fielder the last couple years has been rather remarkable, and much of it had to do with the Mets suggesting that he play deeper after the 2020 season. The reason was he's much more comfortable coming in on balls than going back, and playing deeper allowed him to make that play on Turner. Surely, without a doubt, the best of his career and one of the best catches I have ever seen a Met player make. Now, Starling Marte joined the party when he put the Mets ahead with his 16th home run of the season, his 7th in 133 at-bats against left-handed pitching. Marte has been a great free agent signing overall, and especially important against lefties. Coming into the night, Marte was hitting 300 against left-handed pitching with a 500 slugging percentage and an OPS of 864. After Nimmo's single with two outs in the third, Marte jumped on a hanging changeup from Tyler Anderson, driving it over the fence in right center. Now, why did the Red Sox trade Betts again? Betts took DeGrom deep in the sixth, his fifth home run and his ninth in August, as he makes a push for MVP consideration. Coming into the night, Betts was hitting 333 in August with a 1.045 OPS. For the season, he now has 32 home runs, 29 doubles, hitting 282 with a 918 OPS. Now, credit Adam Ottavino for doing the job in the eighth inning to get the ball to Diaz. The Mets bullpen has been their weak link at times, but Ottavino is having a strong season. And there were times where I was doubting him a couple months ago, but he is really coming on. He came into the night with a 2.09 ERA and a 1.026 whip in 52 appearances. Not too shabby. Now for your listening enjoyment, here are some of the audio highlights from the SNY broadcast of last night's game.
Looks like a high fastball.
Turner runs, swung and missed. Throw to second by Nito on a hop. Not in time. So Freeman strikes out on the high fastball. And Smith goes after the slider for strike three. DeGrom strikes out Freeman and Smith back to back. And a quick work made by DeGrom. That's his third strikeout.
1-2-3, go sit down.
And he goes after Betts with a slider and strikes him out. Two out of the inning. Marte struck out his first time up. And he flies one to deep center field. Back goes Bellinger to the warning track at the wall. It's out of here! Starling Marte strikes again! His second straight night with a home run! A two-run shot for Marte to put the Mets up 2-0 in the third. One-two coming. And he struck him out. Stayed with the slider. Got the swing and miss from Smith for the second time. 11 in a row retired by DeGrom. He's fanned five through four hitless innings. And Muncy goes down on strikes. Six strikeouts now for DeGrom. Mookie Betts has flied out and struck out. And he drives one to deep left field. That's gone. Mookie Betts crushes one into the lower deck in left field for his 32nd home run of the season and cuts the Mets' lead in half. It's 2-1. 3-2 coming. And he got him looking at the fastball. Came right back to the inside corner and gets Muncy for the second time.
Best of the season.
Turner drives one to center, chasing Nimmo back to the warning track right at the fence. He made the catch! Oh, whoa! The catch of the year for Brandon Nimmo! He took a home run away from Justin Turner!
Wow.
Brandon Nimmo keeps the Mets in front in this game by bringing one back. Strikes out Betts with a slider.
There you have it, the audio highlights from yesterday. Again, a game to remember. That was fantastic. That is what Citi Field could look like come October. And wouldn't it be nice if it does? Now let's talk a little bit about Jacob DeGrom. Pitching in playoff-like atmosphere, DeGrom once again proved he levels playing fields against any opponent. He dominated the mighty Dodgers on Wednesday. More than any game Jacob DeGrom has pitched in years, the setting demanded excellence. Since 2018, the Met ace has won two Cy Young Awards and established himself as the best pitcher in baseball, injuries and all. but this was different. This felt more like 2015. This was about performing in a playoff-like atmosphere against a team the Mets almost surely will have to beat if they are to win a championship. Simply put, the Mets needed their ace to let the Los Angeles Dodgers know that come October, best record may not mean as much as best pitcher. The Dodgers may be the powerhouse team in all of baseball, but by shutting down their mighty offense on Wednesday night at Citi Field in a 2-1 win, DeGrom served notice that the Mets may have the edge should these two teams meet in the NLCS. Now, Max Scherzer is part of that equation, obviously, but he's not pitching in this 3-game series, and so it was up to DeGrom not only to play the role of stopper after Tuesday's loss, but send the message the Mets won't care at all how many games the Dodgers win this season or how many runs they score. It'll be a whole new ball game in October. Let's not leave Edwin Diaz out of this either. He gives the Mets a significant advantage over the Dodgers closer Craig Kimbrel, and who has looked very shaky at times, pitching to a 4.14 ERA, allowing more hits than innings pitched. Indeed, Diaz continues to prove that his dominance is unshakable this season. For while Citi Field was bananas in the ninth inning after Timmy Trumpet ushered the Mets closer to the mound with his live rendition of Narco, Diaz calmly and efficiently slammed the door in a 1-2-3 ninth inning. And though Buck Showalter only half-jokingly said there was huge pressure on his closer to deliver all the Timmy Trumpet hype, Diaz insisted it wasn't an issue. "I didn't feel any pressure," he said. "My stuff was basically good warming up, and that gave me confidence. It's easy to pitch when you know you have your stuff." Sure enough, Diaz was under control. He threw 8 straight sliders of his 9 pitches, getting a strikeout and 2 groundouts to ensure a drama-free ninth inning. Meanwhile, the crowd, already in a frenzy, was even more frenzied. Is that proper English, more frenzied? Anyway, standing and roaring on every pitch, finally erupting when Eduardo Escobar threw out Will Smith for the final out of the game. And it was clear how important the game was to the Mets players themselves. All you really needed to see was the emotion Brandon Nimmo showed after he made a leaping catch to rub Justin Turner of a game-tying home run in the 7th inning. When asked about it, Nimmo related it more to the significance of the matchup than merely the catch. "The game had a playoff feel to it," Nimmo said. "Sold-out crowd, electric atmosphere, 2 really good teams. They're a great team, but we feel we match up well against them. If they actually were to meet in the NLCS, it already has the makings of a classic. The Dodgers have elite pitching as well, even without injured Walker Buehler. On Wednesday night, Tyler Anderson matched DeGrom nearly pitch for pitch, in truth, the only real difference being Nimmo's catch. And Clayton Kershaw pitches for the Dodgers on Thursday in the series finale as he returns from a back injury, is still plenty capable of dominance himself. But the point is that DeGrom levels the playing field because he can dominate the best of lineups. From the moment he blew a 100-mile-per-hour fastball past Freddie Freeman for his first strikeout of the night to the one when he broke off a nasty slider on Gavin Lux for his 9th and last strikeout, DeGrom was electric as the big crowd at Citi Field. He wasn't untouchable. He hung a few sliders, one that Mookie Betts launched for a home run and made what he called a mistake to Turner, leaving a fastball way up around the belt that led to the Nimmo catch. But it's the way he attacks hitters relentlessly, with his 100-mile-per-hour fastballs and his nasty sliders, that makes even a great hitter like Betts feel the need to pay tribute, even after taking him deep. "He's pretty much the best, maybe the best ever to pitch," Betts said at his locker after the game. When he was asked what's the toughest part of facing DeGrom, his velocity, high-velocity fastball or slider, Betts chuckled and said, "All of it. He just kind of lives on the edge of the plate, too. He has 101, and when he does leave it out there over the plate, you swing and miss or you foul it off. It's so very hard to hit him." DeGrom, meanwhile, said it's tough pitching to the Dodgers because their lineup is strong from top to bottom. As such, he had to work awfully hard to get to pitch into the 7th inning for the first time in his 6 starts since his return. He still threw 100 to Turner, but the location may have been an indication that he was tired. When Nimmo saved him with a catch, however, he had a surge of adrenaline that helped him strike out Lux to finish the night at 93 pitches. "My goal was to strike him out after that catch," DeGrom said with a smile. In the dugout, Showalter sensed the same thing. You could see Jake kind of step back and say, "Okay, I'm entering the tank here." And I think Nimmo's catch elevated his game at a time when he might have been getting a little weary. Now, Showalter may have been hoping that DeGrom could hand the ball directly to Diaz, but but Adam Ottavino worked a 1-2-3 eighth. Timmy Trumpet got to play his song for Diaz, and the Mets won a game they needed. Not just stay three games ahead of the Braves, but to send a message about October. The best Dodgers have the best record in baseball and probably will end up that way, but the Mets just may very well have the best pitcher. Now here's Jake DeGrom post-game with some comments.
We're in it the whole time, and that makes it a lot of fun. You know, you're playing important baseball, and, you know, we all have the same goal here, and that's continue to win and see where we can go.
You said it, Jake, and it's going to be fun. It's going to be a fun ride. Really is going to be a fun ride. Now, how about that catch by Brandon Nimmo? Nimmo has really worked hard at defending center field and mastering the craft of being a great defensive center fielder, and he gets better day by day. Even Scott Boras says they don't have fences in Wyoming. So Brandon Nimmo could run back and get it. Although they say that it was the weakest part of his game. He's good at coming in at balls, but bad at going back. But he knows how to play the fences in New York, and he sure did yesterday. Nimmo got a good laugh when told about that line after the Mets' 2-1 win over the Dodgers, which he saved by leaping over the center field wall in the seventh inning to retrieve what would have been a game-tying home run by Justin Turner. It was the catch of his lifetime, the catch of the MLB season, the peak of a night at Citi Field that included a Jacob DeGrom gem, a live trumpet show, as I mentioned before, for Edwin Diaz, and a big victory over the best team in baseball record-wise, the Dodgers. It was fun, an all-around fun game, but no more moment sparkled more than Nimmo's catch. Nimmo had to calm down after that, he said. He has to sleep at some point tonight and get ready for a 4 o'clock game tomorrow. But hey, enjoy the moment. It was a big win, which further increased the Mets' confidence and ability to match up with baseball's best team. And that was a result of years of work by Nimmo to improve at the position. Boras' wisecrack made a substantive point. Growing up as a ballplayer in Wyoming did deprive Nimmo of some of the development from which other top prospects benefit. In the years since, he has filled those gaps with persistent work. As he rounded in his mid-20s and pushed toward 29, Nimmo focused specifically on workouts targeted to make him a better center fielder. He's worked a lot on his strength and speed, and he's done everything he can to improve his game and feel comfortable out in center field. And the more he plays at Citi Field, it seems like the more and more he's able to go and make those plays running back. And I think the organization has a lot to do with his improvement. And the team has really expanded his analytics operation under Steve Cohen, team president Sandy Alderson, and GM Billy Epler. What a job they have done. Analytics goes into it well, and Nimmo has to be positioned correctly. And when you're positioned correctly, it makes those plays easier to make. And it makes you look like a better ball player. It seems like Nimmo is always in the right position at the right time. The analytics on Nimmo's catch last night were impressive. Per StatCast, the fly ball had a catch probability of 13% and would have been a home run in 19 of 30 ballparks. And the reason why it was a tough catch was there really was no hang time. It didn't lay up there where you can get to the fence in time your jump and sometimes do it right to raise yourself a little bit. So Nimmo just had a start after the ball and do the best he could with his abilities and time it perfectly. When Nimmo landed back on the warning track, he screamed and pumped his chest. DeGrom broke surly character to tip his cap and smile. It meant a lot to him, Nimmo said, and he doesn't do that easily. This was a triumph years in the making, off seasons in the gym, afternoon shagging flies to ballpark, meeting with analysts and coaches, all leading to one shining moment in the final hours of August with the promise of still greater thrills to come. Now here's Brandon talking with Steve Gelb's postgame.
Best catch you've made in your life?
Yeah, no doubt. That was amazing. It's fun to play in front of you guys, I can tell you that much. Keep coming out. Keep supporting us. This is a blast. This is playoff baseball right here. This is fun, huh?
Incredible atmosphere. An incredible reaction to that catch by this fan base, but also by you. What's going through your mind when that ball falls into your glove?
Well, as everyone knows, I don't really get an opportunity to do much for Jake. So to be able to come up with a big catch for him, I was pretty pumped for that. And finally get to give him something back that he always gives us.
You know, Brandon, you were talking about this fan base, and obviously it's been such a special season to date. Tonight, you've got the Dodgers in town, a close game, Timmy Trumpet playing live, sold out crowd. What does it feel like to be a New York Met these days, especially at Citi Field?
It's an absolute blast. It's a dream come true for a guy who grew up with the Met system. This is what I was dreaming of. And the Mets field, Citi Field being full of passionate, loyal Mets fans who have been through some tough times and are ready for some good times.
Well, the good times are certainly rolling right now, and as has become the custom, three Brandon Nimmo signed baseballs to three of these fans. Brandon, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me. Let's go, Mets!
Brandon Nimmo, always he a joy to watch. And listeners of this podcast from the beginning know I love Brandon Nimmo and Jeff McNeil last year, even when they were struggling. I told you, watch out for those guys this year, and bingo bango, they have proved me right. Way to go, Brandon. Well, it's September 1st, and we're coming down to the stretch. And you know what September 1st means. That means MLB teams can now expand their roster from 26 to 28. Well, who are the Mets bringing up? Well, the Mets are calling up right-hander Adonis Medina, who pitched some clutch games for the Mets in his brief spells with the Mets, and infielder Devin Marrero, and they'll be joining us. And reports are also that Terrence Gore, who was called up Wednesday to replace Brett Beatty's roster spot, will stay in the majors. Many fans had been hoping to see prospect Mark Vientos get the call-up as a DH option, but the 22-year-old is sticking at the AAA level for now. Martino wrote earlier Wednesday that Vientos' call-up was unlikely because the Mets have prioritized defensive versatility, which means Marrero, who can play all over the infield, will get the call. Medina, has appeared in 13 games for the Mets this season. Though his ERA stands at 4.63, he has proven himself as a quality long man when called upon to eat innings out of the bullpen. Marrero has played 3 games with the Mets this season, going 0-for-4 at the plate. So let's welcome Adonis Medina and Devin Marrero to the big club. Now, with all these potential free agent signings coming up for the Mets, and everything going good, Steve Cohen has come out and said that he's hinting at a $300 million spending limit. Now, he may have bottomless pockets, but the Mets' payroll appears to have a limit. Though the team's popular and filthy rich owner was somewhat vague on his plans for the offseason with so many high-priced free agents, Jacob deGrom, Edwin Diaz, Chris Bassett, and Brandon Nimmo, and the big names, Cohen did say he isn't planning to go wild giving out huge deals. The Mets' payroll stands at $291.8 million, according to SportTrack, and it may not go up too much before next season. Now, when speaking to Joel Sherman, Steve Cohen said you should be able to build a pretty good team at $300 million. If you can't do that, then that's a problem. Cohen thinks the Mets have been disciplined in how they spent this season. The offseason will test that. The Post's Mike Puma recently wrote that the Mets' payroll will need to go up roughly $50 million to keep their difference makers while taking into account raises for arbitration-eligible players under contract. He did say not going overboard as far as other owners are concerned is something he thinks about. Cohen said, I am cognizant they are part of the community. I don't want to be flippant about what I'm going to do relative to what's going on with the rest of the baseball community. Listen, I've got to live in this world, Cohen said. I just can't act like it doesn't exist. With that said, Cohen didn't seem overly worried what it will take for the Mets to remain one of the best teams in the sport next season and what it will take the group to keep that group intact. Cohen said, we can figure this out pretty quickly. These decisions aren't that hard. It really depends on who we want to be back, what the other opportunities are out there, and we'll figure it out. So no need to panic. Just like this year, the Mets made the right decision. I think the Met Corps will do what they have to do to go ahead and basically put another winning ball club out there next year, and I think they will. Now, the unfortunate news with the Mets is Brett Beatty's rookie season, in all likelihood, is over. The team's number two prospect, given a shot at the major league level in the wake of Luis Guillorme's groin injury, suffered a UCL tear in his right thumb that will require surgery, the Mets announced before yesterday's game. Beatty hurt his thumb Sunday against the Rockies while diving for a foul ball. The typical recovery time the Mets said is 5 weeks, which would come after the regular season is over. Beatty hit 184, 244, 342 in 11 games with a 586 OPS. He homered in his first at-bat against the Braves. Fortunately for the Mets, Eduardo Escobar recently came off the 10-day injured list, and Luis Guillorme is close to starting a minor league rehabilitation start. An assignment, I should say. Guillorme, out since August 14th with a left groin strain, has been swinging and taking ground balls the past few days. He has yet to run full speed. That is the last hurdle before he can appear in minor league games. Guillorme and Escobar platooned at third base before Guillorme's injury. It's definitely feeling better, Guillorme said. It's a matter of when I'm ready. We're just checking all the boxes, making sure everything's fine. There's no point in rushing something for me to come back. That was before the extent of Beatty's injury was known. Outfielder Terrence Gore replaced Beatty on the active roster, leaving the Mets without a backup infielder for the time being. After the game, manager Buck Showalter said there's an outside possibility Beatty could return at some point this year. Tyron Megill is closing in on his long way to return, is hoping to be a key cog in the Mets' bullpen when he gets to that point. The right-hander, who has a shoulder strain, told the Post he will start a rehabilitation assignment with Double-A Binghamton on Thursday, and the plan is for him to make 5 outings before rejoining the Mets. Megill will throw 1 inning in his first few appearances and progress to 2. His second outing is scheduled for Sunday. Megill was a reliever in college, so he has experience in this role. He said, he's all for it. If I can help out in the bullpen, that's what I'll do. Going out, filling up the strike zone is the biggest thing. Now, he threw a 25-pitch live batting practice session on Monday. He last appeared in a game on June 16th. Megill started the year exceptionally well, pitching to a 1.93 ERA in 5 April starts. But injuries to his right biceps and shoulder have sidelined him for much of the past 4 months. He does feel good, he said. In addition to Megill, manager Buck Showalter said that Drew Smith, who has a right lat strain, is also close to pitching in minor league games, though they haven't sailed on specific days yet. The Mets appear to be considering a 6-man rotation for their starting pitchers for the next time through. Showalter said Carlos Carrasco, left oblique strain, could return to rotation this week, and David Peterson may start as well, potentially giving Taijuan Walker and Jacob DeGrom an extra day of rest. The only certainty at this point is Chris Bassett starting the series finale today against the Dodgers. With the rosters expanding by 2 players on Thursday, Showalter said Michael Perez is an option for a call-up, but he wasn't called up. Now, the 30-year-old veteran performed well in place of Thomas Nido before being sent to Triple-A Syracuse. And like I said, Vientos will not be coming up. So I know a lot of people are excited about the possibility of Mark Vientos coming up, but he will not be coming up. Now let's do some shameless plugging for this podcast. This podcast is up as we try to do one every day. So if you're not a subscriber to this podcast, please do join, subscribe, hit subscribe on your favorite carrier, and you'll be alerted every time one is up. And let's not forget, this is a sister companion to our baseball group, New York Mets Baseball Way of Life. So if you're a Facebook member, you have to subscribe to the group, New York Mets Baseball Way of Life, become a member. What a great way to follow the Mets 24/7, 365. This podcast and the Facebook group Mets. We cover it all there. Now, as we do every day, we give you the group's Jeopardy and trivia question of the day. Who's ready? Today's trivia question is, who was the last Met player to win Baseball America Player of the Year? The second clue is, second thing we do is Jeopardy, and here it is. Today's Jeopardy, 2 clues as always. Trade with Alejandro Pena by the LA Dodgers to the Mets in exchange for Juan Samuel. And he wore number 6 as a Met. Now, lock in your answers, and we'll be back at the end of the podcast to tell you how you're doing and what is going on. Now, we had some great pictures in the group today. We showed the crowd exiting after a playoff game down the ramps at Shea Stadium. Remember those ramps? They were great. A great photo of Daryl Strawberry accepting the 1983 NL Rookie of the Year. And what a beautiful photo we have. The World's Fair and a brand new Shea Stadium captured in one shot. Beautiful. You got to check it out in the group. Then we asked the question as we showed the ramp and the escalators. Which did you take, the ramp or the escalator? And then we showed Brandon Nimmo's catch. Oh my. Then we had a question of the day yesterday. Which number should we retire next? Anthony Barcia said Eddie Cranepool. George Dilley said Gary Carter. Tyler Murray said David Wright. Ciro Grassi, Cleon Jones, Dan Wiener, Mookie Wilson, Ron Davis, another vote for the Crane. Gary Oventhal said, number 48, 10 years from now. And Scott Emelock and myself both said David Wright. Then we posed a question. When I say Tug McGraw, what's the first thing that comes to your head? Don Kecko says, you gotta believe. Maxwell Cates said, I never smoked AstroTurf. Warren Haney says, you gotta believe. It has the Scott Emelock. Dan Wiener emphasized period after those two statements. Gary Oventhal said his son's tribute song to him. And Steve Scanlon said Tug wearing an old WW2 German helmet on Kiner's Corner after the Mets clinched in 69. Good stuff is
on. And now Timmy Trump.
If you're not a subscriber,
and now Timmy
group or a member of the group, you got to, just from Mike Fried's great analysis every day. Good stuff from Mike. Good stuff. And then we posted Bob Klapsch's a tweet which said, well done, old-timers, event by the Mets. Unlike Will Pons, who never wondered or had the dollars to bring everyone together, Steve Cohen sprung for airfare and hotel accommodations for all 65 former players. Good for the franchise and the fans. Way to go, Uncle Steve. Much appreciated. Now, as we do every day, we celebrate Met birthdays and transactions on this date. And today we celebrate the birthday of Tom Burgess. Who remembers Tom Burgess? He was a coach with the Mets in 1977, and he managed the Mets Tidewater Farm team, which was AAA at that time, in 1976. Happy birthday to prize prospect David West. Never panned out to be the pitcher we thought he would be. At one time, we were going to trade David West for Mark Langston. I don't know if you remember that. But happy birthday to David West. And happy birthday to Derek Wallace, who was with us in 1996 and pitched in 19 games. And happy birthday to Louis Rojas. Who remembers Louis Rojas? Yes, our manager in 2020 and 2021. And he was a quality control coach in 2019 and wore number 19. He's the brother of Moises Alou, nephew of Jesus Alou, nephew of Matty Alou, and son of Felipe Alou. Boy, those Alous really populated baseball, didn't they? Now in the transactions page, we look at some deals that were done in 1970. Well, one deal in 1970 on this date, when the Mets traded Rod Gaspar to the Padres for Ron Herbel. Then on this day in 2001, the Mets traded Kyle Kessel to the Detroit Tigers for C.J. Nitkowski, who's now on MLB Network Radio, if you ask Sirius. I think he's the Colorado Rockies announcer, too. On this day in 2004, the Mets signed free agent L.A. Soler. On this day in 2013, the Mets signed workhorse pitcher Aaron Harang. And on this day in 2020, the Seattle Mariners claimed Walter Lockett from the Mets. So there you have it, your transactions and everything that happened on this day in Met history. Now, as we do, we're going to wrap up the podcast by giving you the answers to the trivia question and the Jeopardy question. Once again, the trivia question was, who was the last Met player to win Baseball America Player of the Year? Well, the correct answer is Greg Jeffries in 1987. Two clues for today. For the Jeopardy, traded with Alejandro Pena by the LA Dodgers to New York Mets in exchange for Juan Samuel, and wore number 6 as a Met. Well, the answer to the Jeopardy is, who is Mike Marshall? Congrats to John Tierney on being the first to nail that one. John is probably our expert, and him and Kareem Haywood rock the boat. But there are experts when it comes to these things. So that's going to wrap up another great podcast. What a day it was last night at Citi Field. And again, thank you for your patronage. Tune in tomorrow for another great podcast. And as always, we'll be back to talk more Met baseball. Don't forget, today's game is afternoon game at 4:05. Rare weekday afternoon game at 4:05. I think the only one of the year. And we have Chris Bassett going on the mound against Clayton Kershaw on SNY. And we'll be back to talk about it all tomorrow. Enjoy a beautiful day. Enjoy the great game that's ahead of us. And enjoy this beautiful season that the Mets are having. We'll catch you again tomorrow. Take care and let's go, Mets.
The Mets. the Mets. Step right up and